You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Kelsey Peace. This is the WFHB local news for Thursday, April 11th, 2024.
Later in the program, we have Prescription for Healthcare, a podcast collaboration between the WFHB local news and Medicare for All Indiana. More in the bottom half of our program.
I look forward to the recommendations from these teams on new and innovative ways in which to engage our residents and accomplish great things together.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Bloomington Mayor Carrie Thompson gave her first State of the City address earlier this week. More coming up next in your daily headlines.
On Tuesday, Bloomington Mayor Carrie Thompson delivered the State of the City address, highlighting her first 100 days in office. Thompson discussed the solar eclipse, housing, accessibility and transparency in government, and more during her speech. First, she thanked those involved with coordinating events surrounding the total solar eclipse in the city.
As you all know, yesterday, Bloomington welcomed thousands of guests to our community for a once-in-a-lifetime event, the total solar eclipse. I'm honoring it on my shirt here. The city worked alongside state and county governments, as well as our school corporation, IU, and other partners to pull it off and to do it in style. And as this community has done time and time again, yesterday, despite the moon's best efforts, Bloomington's light shone through. I want to thank everyone who helped make yesterday such a success, especially our parks, public work, and public safety personnel. Thank you for the months of planning that went into this event and for a job exceedingly well done.
Next, she addressed racist, anti-Semitic remarks that were made during last week's city council meeting.
When we need to create solutions together, we ought to be doing it in public, where we can and will create safe spaces to bring ideas. Those tables are not always comfortable, but in Bloomington, we must have the kind of conversations where we hear the hard truths and we work through them together. Because 3 minutes at the microphone doesn't solve problems, and it often inflames them. When we hear free speech at the microphone, which turns to outright white supremacist and Nazi hate, we must speak against it. Ignorance and power plays are not supported in the city that I lead, a city whose vibrancy, economic and social success depends on the vibrancy of a diversity of residents bringing your ideas, your talents, and your hearts to our community. I'm committed to continuing to change the paradigm of government, to face the challenges that we see here in Bloomington head on, and to stay laser focused on those issues alone.
During last week's meeting, the City Council unanimously passed a resolution calling for a cessation of hostilities and for delivery of humanitarian aid for civilians in Gaza. Thompson had previously stated that she would not sign any resolutions that would extend beyond the purview of the city. She made no indication of how she would proceed on the resolution during the State of the City. Then she shifted her talking points to take a look back at her first 100 days in office and what she hopes to accomplish in the remainder of her first term.
Beyond building our team, I've begun to implement new processes and safeguards to make sure our city government is operating at full power and with a newfound commitment to customer service. On my first day in office, I ordered an independent audit of the city's finances, and I look forward to sharing the findings with you as soon as they become available. And believe me, we're as anxious as you all are for those findings. We've also conducted a review of all of the city's ongoing litigation, our human resources practices and procedures, and constituent response times. These and other analyses will bring changes and improvements to city government, and I'm excited to partner with my teammates at City Hall and on the council to continue raising the bar of excellence and to make sure Bloomington's government works for its people. We've resolved cases and we've taken a more collaborative approach to pending cases, working for wins for our community, not for our side. We're rapidly catching up on tardy State Board of Accounts audits, with one submitted and another nearly complete.
Throughout her campaign, Thompson talked about making city affairs more transparent and more accessible. During her speech, she touted what she perceived as steps taken to fulfill that campaign promise.
A central part of my campaign platform was making our government even more transparent and accessible. I'm pleased to report that we've already made significant progress there. I post videos on social media with key updates because it's important for a mayor to talk directly to her residents. I'm conducting a series of traveling town halls held throughout the city to bring government directly to those we serve. I want to thank Council President Piedmont Smith for participating in the first town hall, and I look forward to sharing the spotlight and the public pressure with all of the other council members soon. We also promise to improve and enhance the publication of reports and studies on our website so that residents and the press have timely and comprehensive access to the workings of city government. The public posting of the employee compensation study, for an example, was part of a concerted effort to ensure residents have access to the same information that their decision makers do. And tonight, I'm pleased to announce that former Mayor Mark Cruzan will lead a new resident advisory panel on open government with a mission of continuing this new era of openness in city operations. This team will work to identify how city government can be more transparent and responsive. Our immediate next steps will be to conduct a public information audit to assess current practices and identify better ways of doing the public's business. We'll draft a plan of action that leads to a more nimble turnaround of public information requests. Dave's happy to hear that. And we will assess the city's various information portals, including, most importantly, our website. We've also created several other resident-driven advisory committees, which add unique and important perspectives on major projects like Showers West, Hopewell, and others. I look forward to the recommendations from these teams on new and innovative ways in which to engage our residents and accomplish great things together.
Next, she touched on how the housing crisis has impacted the community. She noted the lack of affordable housing and the prevalence of unhoused community members in Bloomington. Thompson discussed how she believes her housing plan will work to address housing affordability issues in the city.
There are too few affordable places to live in Bloomington and too many unhoused neighbors. This cannot continue, and it will not, period. To address this, I have tasked our team at the Department of Housing and Neighborhood Development with analyzing and implementing the recommendations of the 2020 and 2023 housing studies to craft a comprehensive citywide housing plan. It's 2024, and we're just now implementing a 2020 study. That tells you a lot about how we got here in regard to housing and homelessness in Bloomington. Studies do no good on a shelf. Plans inform action. It is impacting every resident and every neighborhood in our city. We must address it head on. We can wait no longer. We will wait no longer. We must act, and we will act. I've directed staff to find every way to eliminate red tape, streamline our processes, and identify barriers that the city may have put up unintentionally over the years, resulting in a piecemeal approach to housing. And now that we have permanent leadership in the housing and planning departments, we will soon launch a vital task force to uncover even more ways to improve our housing ecosystem, aligning with city policies along with our values, and hold builders, developers, and owners accountable for the promises they make around affordability. And make no mistake, we will welcome these builders and developers with tools and incentives that help them provide the housing we need for the people who work in Bloomington. There are new homes going up around our community, and new developments like the Summit District are being worked through. The Plan Commission has approved this development with 4,200 new units planned for the Southwest Side. As this project moves forward to the City Council, it has my full support. This is housing for people who work here, close to some of our largest employers, as well as some of our best amenities. The Hopewell Neighborhood Project is progressing, and this fall, Bloomington's newest park, Hopewell Commons, will open and serve as an anchor and common space for the neighborhood, with places to explore, play, and connect.
Thompson then addressed the issue of homelessness in the city. During her term thus far, Thompson has overseen the removal of two encampments. The first eviction took place at a city-owned property at Fairview Street and Patterson Drive in early January. The second encampment was removed later that month near Wheeler Mission on the west side of Bloomington. During the State of the City, she said the city is preparing to remove another encampment, citing, quote, safety issues, end quote.
There's no dignity in living in a tent, Bloomington. And there's very little dignity in a community that thinks it can do no better. We can do better. We are Bloomington. Working together, we will co-create a plan of compassion, safety, and dignity for all involved. Since taking office, I've assisted with the removal of two different encampments due to critical safety issues at the sites. Those were necessary acts, and they were exceedingly tough days for everyone involved, but none more so than our neighbors living without shelter. Next month, we'll be moving another camp, which has created safety issues. We're working now with the residents of that camp to find paths to housing. But it's not as simple as ordaining a place to camp or simply putting some sleeping mats on a floor. We need supportive caseworkers, mental health care, and help for those that are in crisis levels of substance use. I've already learned so much from working directly with caring professionals in the nonprofit and social service arena to help in these situations and to implement our Heading Home plan. Working towards crafting a broader, more comprehensive system to assist the unhoused population. I'm proud to announce that thanks to this partnership, we now have an emergency shelter for the medically fragile at the First Christian and First United Methodist churches. Thanks to the work of our faith community and other partners. But there is much more to do and much more to come.
To watch the full State of the City address, you can visit our website at wfhb.org following this broadcast.
Up next, we have Prescriptions for Healthcare, a podcast collaboration between the WFHB Local News and Medicare for All Indiana. This month, hosts Dr. Rob Stone and Karen Greenstone interviewed Indiana State Senator Shelley Yoder to talk about what the legislator has been doing regarding healthcare in Indiana, and especially contraception and abortion rights. We now turn to Prescription for Healthcare on the WFHB Local News.
not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when.
From Bloomington, Indiana, welcome to Prescription for Healthcare on WFHB Community Radio, sponsored by Medicare for All Indiana. I'm Karen Greenstone, along with Dr. Rob Stone.
Hello.
Today on Prescription for Healthcare, we welcome Senator Shelley Yoder, who represents Indiana Senate District 40. Senator Yoder, an Indiana native, is a senior lecturer at the Indiana University Kelley School of Business and previously spent many years leading nonprofit organizations related to women's health. Senator Shelley Yoder, welcome to Prescription for Healthcare, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Karen and Rob. It's great to be here.
Last month, while talking with Dr. Gabriel Bosselet of the Good Trouble Coalition, I said that the Indiana legislature has been enthusiastic about keeping the government out of business regulation while being very comfortable interfering with regulating healthcare options for women. Let's stay in that lane. Indiana has some of the highest hospital charges in the country that affect all of us and the cost of doing business in Indiana. There's been some effort in the legislature to rein in the hospitals, but it's a slow slog. This year, the legislature passed a bill trying to regulate hospital mergers. It's something, but it does little to help Hoosiers who find themselves looking at crippling hospital bills. What are you hearing from constituents who face increasing healthcare costs?
That is such a great question. And when constituents talk to me about their medical debt, the rising cost of healthcare, what I don't hear is, I wish I received worse care in order to address how expensive the care I am receiving has gotten. So I don't hear people saying, like you would, I'm going to find a generic brand. When I go to the grocery store, I'm going to be willing to sacrifice my brand name with the generic brand. I don't hear that. People still want to feel like a human being and that their physicians and their healthcare providers care deeply about them. When we are addressing this question of the high cost of medicine and healthcare in this state and in this country, what's disturbing is at the same time, what I hear from constituents is they don't feel like they are receiving the same quality of care when they walk into, whether that is their healthcare provider or the emergency room, or have to have something serious and are looking at surgery. They don't feel like they're getting the same kind of attention to that care. They feel that they're just being pushed through the system like they're just a number or a thing and not a human being. So that's what I hear from constituents when it comes to affordability is, I'm paying more and I feel like I'm getting less.
And we're going to go into another subject entirely. After Governor Holcomb signed a near total ban on abortions in Indiana in August of 2022, a legal challenge delayed implementation, but the ban took effect in August of 2023. On April 3rd, just last week, the Indiana Court of Appeals affirmed that the abortion ban violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA. Can you help us understand what is happening?
So the fact that the courts upheld the injunction is good news, but it really only impacts those individuals who are part of that lawsuit. That is problematic. Going back to the question of what do you hear from constituents, over and over again, I hear, please get politicians out of my doctor's office. Please let me have these difficult conversations and receive the care that I need to receive. Having that conversation with my healthcare provider and what I need. What is going on with Indiana's access to reproductive health care and having a, I think you could say, a total ban on abortion, because you know, we have a near total ban, but it's essentially chased every, not just abortion provider out of the state of Indiana, but really healthcare providers. Because when you begin to claw back rights when it comes to healthcare access in one area, it will impact healthcare accessibility across the board. You're going to feel it in other areas of medicine, not just in reproductive healthcare. And we are seeing this across Indiana. We are definitely seeing this when hospitals and labor and delivery units in hospitals are having a hard time attracting healthcare providers and keeping them in the state of Indiana. And therefore, you have these areas of medicine having to close in community and county hospitals across Indiana. That is a problem. And so when the courts upheld this injunction, it recognized that when it comes to understanding life and understanding healthcare and access to healthcare, it's not just a one-size-fits-all issue. That people come to accessing healthcare and understanding what their bodies need and what's right with their faith and their understanding of what it means to be a faithful person and their religious expression, it's going to vary across the spectrum of Hoosiers. And what politicians did, what the supermajority did in the state of Indiana is they said, we're going to decide the quality of healthcare, the type of healthcare, and what you can receive in Indiana when they passed that near total ban on abortion care in the summer of 2022. So while it's good that they upheld that injunction, it doesn't impact all Hoosiers. And I think we still need to fight until the very end and take a stand for all Hoosiers when it comes to being able to access reproductive health care across the board. We know that the majority of Hoosiers want access to the full spectrum of reproductive health care for themselves, for their wives, for their sisters, for their moms, but for families, for individuals, because it's dangerous when you have legislators deciding what's going to be available and accessible in the state of Indiana. And we see that in other states. You see it in Indiana, but you begin recognizing in other states that when you begin to ban access to abortion, the next in line is going to be what? That with IVF, that with access to contraceptives. And that is what we're seeing in the state of Indiana as well. We've had two sessions now, and we've been addressing contraceptives. And this last session, unfortunate that we have now decided that when it comes to long-acting reversible contraception, we're going to divide out and we're going to treat those differently. That argument coming out of the state house was incredibly frustrating, and it really didn't end up well for Hoosiers.
Could you explain that for our listeners, the issue around IUDs versus long-term implantable?
So long-acting reversible contraceptives, there are a couple of different types. You have the subdermal, which is implanted in the arm. Mm-hmm. Then you have the utero ones that are implanted into the uterus. And those can come, the one that's implanted into the arm, those are hormonal. There are a couple of different types that are implanted into the uterus. You've got a non-hormonal copper IUD, and then you have a hormonal regulated IUD. What the bill and the debate in the state house that took place around long-acting reversible contraceptives, it divided those out. It took the subdermals that are hormonal and go into the arm, treated those differently than the IUDs, the ones that are implanted into the uterus. And the reason was because Indiana's Right to Life came to the legislature last year and said IUDs are abortifacients and cause abortions are a form of abortion and should be treated differently. So the bill number was 1426. It separated those and said, we're going to just allow and we're going to require hospitals to have on hand only the subdermal implant post delivery. Person who delivers can still have the option to receive an IUD, but it's not required by the hospital to have those on hand.
Oh, wow.
And the conversation was about because it's not appropriate. Let me just be clear. ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, I have to slow down because it's a mouthful, as well as Good Trouble that you brought up, which is a coalition of over 2,000 doctors and healthcare providers in the state of Indiana only. Good Trouble is a state of Indiana organization mobilizing around the issue of trying to address good quality healthcare in Indiana, specifically working really hard to make sure that total bans on abortion, getting involved into politicians, getting involved in the issuing of medicine, doesn't happen. So that's how Good Trouble came about. But all of these individuals came out very strong against this creating a two-tiered system. They worked tirelessly to educate folks like me, legislators, on the dangers of bogus claims and misconceptions around birth control, which was happening in the conversation around 1426. And in this landscape of understanding long-acting reversible contraceptives. So we worked really hard to make sure that all, we call them LARCs, just as an acronym, because we love our acronyms in all areas of medicine and education, but those are called LARCs. And when it comes to understanding and really communicating good science around LARCs, you need to discuss them and leave them whole. Because what happens when you begin to separate them is it could establish a precedent going forward that Medicaid will only cover some contraceptives, some birth control, and not others. Because what was successful in 1426 is allowing bogus claims to once again to infiltrate the way that Indiana adopts policy and sets laws for Hoosiers. And that was a really frustrating piece in this last session, but we've got a lot of work to do in the state of Indiana when it comes to lowering healthcare costs, removing barriers to healthcare, and reinstating access to abortion care in this state.
So, Senator Yoder, what is your prescription for healthcare?
For the state of Indiana, I think what is critical is a broader approach to this. Many times when we have these conversations, when it comes to addressing affordability, we don't have all the players in the room. We're going to address affordability just by talking to hospitals, but then we're not going to talk to insurance companies, or we're going to talk about affordability and we're just going to talk to employers, because in this country, employers play a very critical role in that conversation. The landscape is so complicated, and it's very important to have a holistic approach to this conversation when we're going to address affordability in the state. But we can't do that by leaving out quality healthcare as well. What I want to see is we need to make sure that Hoosiers are receiving the greatest care at an affordable price. This last session, we had a bill that was going to address medical debt in the state of Indiana, and it didn't even get a hearing. Why do the bills that could really have an important impact in just having the conversation to be able to learn what Hoosiers are facing, why do those not even get a hearing? But bills like banning access to abortion care not only get a hearing, but then they're signed into law, even when they're not even popular or desired by Hoosiers. My prescription is let's repeal and go back to being able to access full reproductive health care in the state of Indiana. Get legislators out of the doctor's offices and let Hoosiers be able to have these conversations with healthcare providers. Let's respect the field of medicine and do all that we can to increase medical health outcomes for Hoosiers while lowering the cost of that health care in the state of Indiana.
Thank you, Senator Shelley Yoder, for taking time to talk with us today. We deeply appreciate your work and your commitment to our community and to Indiana. This is Karen Greenstone along with Dr. Rob Stone for Prescription for Healthcare on WFHB Community Radio in Bloomington, Indiana. To your good health, everyone, stay safe and thank you for listening.
We may never see this moment, a place and time again.